I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, go to our website, which is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon donor in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to talk about the upcoming Mr. Olympia contest, which takes place next month in Las Vegas. I believe it is on October 11th and 12th. And I'm going to talk to Dan Solomon. Dan is the one who is in charge of running the Mr. Olympia. He's been in charge of it, I believe, for the last 4 years or so. Dan is a friend of mine. I knew him for many, many years. He lives out here in Florida as well. And Dan is doing a great job making the show bigger and bigger and bigger. So I got a chance to talk to him. Kind of a short interview, only about a half hour. And we're going to talk about what's coming up for the Mr. Olympia this year, which is going to be the 60th Mr. Olympia. So it's going to be a momentous Mr. Olympia contest this year. Since the interview is kind of short, after the interview is over, I'm going to read some old magazines. I went way back into the archives here, guys, and found some old muscle builders. I thought I would go back to some early Mr. Olympia competitions. So the first one I found was from the January 1969 issue, which covered the 1968 Mr. Olympia. This was the one that Sergio won unopposed, and Frank Zane also won the Mr. America title that year. So that was written by Dick Tyler. Dick Tyler was the big writer for Muscle Builder back before Rick Wayne started writing for him. And then I've got the first article about Arnold that appeared in Muscle Builder magazine, and this comes from the May 1969 issue, and Arnold was on the cover, and he's doing like a side chest pose on the beach, and it says, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the 21-year-old new phenomenon of the space-age muscle world. So this was written, I think, by Joe Weider. So I'm going to read that after we read this first article. And then I'm going to go to an old Muscle Mag International. This was, I believe, from, I think, the first year Muscle Mag started, summer of 75. And it was called Don't Kid the Kid. And it was about Arnold and his challenge from Lou Ferrigno that they were hyping up in the magazines. And Rick was saying, forget about it. Sergio was the only one that was a real threat to Arnold. So that's pretty interesting. Written as only Rick Wayne can write. So I'm going to read those right after we get done with our interview with Dan Solomon. So you guys will really enjoy those. All right. Not much else is going on. I've got some emails here. So I wanted to read some emails that I got. If you guys want to email me on the show, you can email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I'll read your email on the podcast. All right. This first one comes from one of our Patreon donors, Jim Kerr. Jim has been a big supporter of the show. He said, John, thanks for reading the Once Upon a Time in Australia story. I've been trying to find it since Roger Walker referenced it when you interviewed him some years back. Hopefully one day the author's name will be revealed. I think the short version of the story is that Arnold was in debt to Paul Graham because Paul didn't throw Arnold under the bus when Paul got busted for stealing cars. That part of the story sounds pretty accurate to me. I think Arnold was in Hawaii with Paul Graham when Paul got arrested. Yeah, that's what I heard too. Boyer Co. alluded to this in one of your interviews with Boyer. Paul made sure that Arnold wasn't dragged into the case. Then Joe Weider was in debt to Arnold because Arnold was his stalking horse in his ongoing fight with Dan Lorry. If you read Dan Lorry's side of the story in his excellent book, Heart of Steel, Arnold used Joe's lawyer in the lawsuit, and Joe was paying the legal bills for Arnold. Arnold was awarded $100,000 in that suit. Again, this part of the story seems reasonable to me. I think that's the story of Dan Lorry's involvement in bodybuilding has been neglected in the bodybuilding press, and a future podcast on Dan would be a great idea. The next conclusion in the story is that Arnold got Joe to give Paul Graham the 1980 Mr. Olympia show. Again, a reasonable conclusion. The final conclusion is that part of the deal is that they fixed the contest in Arnold's favor. One way to do that was to stack the judging panel with judges friendly to Arnold. It's true that the judging panel was filled with Arnold's friends, But Arnold was friends with just about everybody in bodybuilding except Dan Lorry and Mike Mentzer. It would be difficult to create a judging panel at that time that didn't contain at least a few of Arnold's friends. I think this aspect of the story is less convincing to me, but it's not totally impossible. Keep up the great work. Yeah, but I think a lot of those judges were really good friends of Arnold. Not that he just knew them, but they were really good friends with him. Mitsu Kawashima loved Arnold. Albert Busek, of course, was one of Arnold's great friends, so he was going to vote for Arnold for sure. Reg Park was another one that was really close to Arnold. Who else was on the judging panel? Dr. Michael Walczak, I believe, you know, he was good friends with Arnold. Oh, and then the other one was Brendan Ryan, who was from Australia, who, from what I read, was not really like a national level judge, but they put him on the Olympia judging panel, even though he wasn't really a registered national judge, let alone a pro judge or Olympia judge. And he loved Arnold, and they took off Peter McCarthy, who was the former head of the Australian bodybuilding. He was supposed to be a judge. They removed Peter and they put in Brendan Ryan. So I think those guys, I think that's five, right? Brendan Ryan, Reg Park, Mitsu Kawashima, Albert Busek, and was there one more? I think those four for sure. Then you had three other judges left because there were seven judges. So Dr. Michael Walczak, I don't know which way he would have went. But then the other two judges were the ones that voted against Arnold, and that was Jacques Blumhardt and Dan Howard. And Dan Howard was a friend of Arnold, and he was a manager at World's Gym at the time. But Dan, I think, gave Arnold third, and I think Arnold didn't talk to him for many years after that. So those were the two that went against Arnold. And also, I think some of those other judges that liked Arnold also put Mike Mentzer low. So yeah, I think the judging panel was kind of stacked in Arnold's favor. Not that it was fixed, but they did put the right judges in the right places. And then I think if you got enough of those judges, it's going to go in Arnold's way. And it did. So I got another email here from Henrik Paladanius from Finland. He says, "Hi, John, I remember you kindly assisting me in purchasing your excellent books and shipping them to Finland way back in the past. Thank you for that. Now on to business. I stumbled upon a video with you interviewing Jerry Branum. The series is by far my all-time favorite old school bodybuilding wisdom. You mentioned a bodybuilder in the video around the 10:30 mark. Do you have any plans to interview the man Jerry mentioned and agreed it would be a fine interview?" I'm not sure who that was, so I'll have to look into that. "I can honestly also tell you that I've come to the cradle of old school bodybuilding, LA. I've yet to make the trip to Santa Monica, but that's still in the books." Oh, it looks like Henrik has moved to LA. Okay. Oh, yeah, you definitely got to go to Santa Monica and Gold's Gym, Henrik, for sure. All right, so that's all I got for our emails. So here is our interview with Dan Solomon. And afterwards, stick around because I'm going to read some articles from some old muscle builders and one from Muscle Mag. All right, here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special guest with us this week, Mr. Dan Solomon, who is the president of the Olympia. He promotes the Mr. Olympia every year, which is a huge undertaking, the biggest show of the year. And this year is going to be a very special year because it is the 60th Mr. Olympia, which started way back in 1965. So, Dan, I appreciate you coming on the show. I know you're a very busy man, so thanks for joining us.
I appreciate the invitation. What I love about coming on this show is most of the other shows, they want to talk about the business of bodybuilding, or they want to talk about all kinds of different trends and things that impact that side of the game. But when I get to come here, I get to talk about the thing that I love the most, and that's just bodybuilding. Let's talk about the eras. Let's talk about the champions. Let's talk about all the things that sort of got us to fall in love with this to begin with. Because one of the slippery slopes I know that I walk is when you get so wrapped up in the business side of what we do, and you're so focused on balance sheets and P&Ls and all kinds of things that, you know, are important, right? Because we have to run a business to grow the sport.
Yeah.
But sometimes I just miss talking about, who should have won that 2007 Olympia.
Right. Yeah. The nostalgia.
All that. I really enjoy that. So it's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be, like I said, a special Mr. Olympia because it is the 60th. And Mr. Olympia has been around a long time. It's been around longer than the Super Bowl. It started way back in 1965.
It sure has. And, it's an exciting time. The 60th year. I was actually on the phone the other day with, if you can imagine, Betty Weeder.
And, oh, really? Wow.
I try to check in with Betty whenever I can. Of course,
Yeah.
Your audience. I don't need to tell your audience who Betty is. Obviously, they know.
Yeah.
But Betty and her husband, and I guess you could say, and her brother-in-law, they co-founded the event for which I am privileged to run. And it's, I always like to reach out to her and just kind of let her know what's happening, what we're doing, where we're going to be, how we're growing. And look, this was their life for so long.
Yeah.
But it's very much the Super Bowl of our sport. It is the rarefied air of that mountaintop. And you know, I always say, you know, it's any bodybuilding thing, you rattle off a year and you connect it to the Olympia champion, right? That's what makes
the Olympians
so special. So yeah, we got big things planned for this year. We're ready.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Betty Weider because I know that you always remember Joe Weider. And I remember, I think a couple of years ago when the Olympia was in, maybe in Orlando, and I went to that seminar that you have on Sunday with all the winners. And I remember at the end of the seminar, you took the mic and you told everybody in the audience, you said, I always want you guys to remember Joe Weider. And I'm sure a lot of people today don't even know who Joe Weider is because, you know, Joe Weider has been, I don't know how long ago he passed away, probably over 10 years ago now.
Yep.
But a lot of the younger people who follow the sport, who got into the sport with all these new divisions, they don't even know who Joe Weider is. And Joe Weider is the one who created the Mr. Olympia. So you always kind of remember his legacy. And I think that's great. And also at like the Tampa Pro that we have out here in Tampa, you have the Ben Weider Lifetime Achievement Award that you give out every year. So you do remember those individuals, Joe and Ben Weider, who started Mr. Olympia and who really started IFBB professional bodybuilding as we know it.
I try to, you know, sometimes I'm guilty of disconnecting sometimes when we get wrapped up, but I really, really work hard to remind myself and everyone who will listen that, you know, none of us are doing this
if
it wasn't for the courage of Joe to sort of envision this world of fitness and transformation and muscle and all that back in the 1940s when the world was very different. And the thought of bodybuilding was almost absurd at that time. So the fact that Joe sort of championed that cause and ushered in not just a sport, but really built the foundation for an entire industry. And, you know, let's be reminded, it's not just the competitors. There are photographers, judges, videographers, content providers, hosts. The list goes on and on of people who make some version of a living doing the things that were created by Joe Weider. So I always try to do it, but I think in any sport, John, the disconnect happens. I'm sure that today's modern day baseball players, they come in and they probably don't know the people that laid down the groundwork. I mean, when you think about how important it is, like the Jackie Robinson Day every year, which of course Jackie Robinson is the pioneer and laid the path and built the groundwork for African Americans to be part of the game of baseball. Now we celebrate Jackie, so we know that story really well. And I always say, if I could ever sit down with people, always ask me if I could ever sit down with anybody, dead or alive, anybody, I would choose to sit down and talk to Jackie Robinson. I think he's remarkable and his story is amazing. But there's other Jackie Robinson stories out there in other communities and other places that people just don't know. And those stories aren't told. So I think we all have a responsibility. And that's one of the reasons why I commend you for what you're doing, because a lot of your audience will remember the name Peter McGough. Now, Peter McGough, to me, was the preeminent historian of all time. And I'm also the most talented writer in the history of bodybuilding. And when Peter passed, you know, we were concerned that there wouldn't be somebody to continue telling those stories. And you're doing that. So I appreciate what you're doing as well. But we got to remember where we came from, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We got to remember our roots for sure.
Yeah.
Well, having said that, since this is the 60th Mr. Olympia, do you guys have plans to bring back some of the former champions and, you know, kind of talk about the history of the sport?
Yeah, this event is filled with so many, I guess you could say, surprises. I mean, the one that probably won't be a big surprise is when many of the former champions show up. Of course, there have been 18 Mr. Olympias in the history of the event.
Yeah.
Five of them have passed away, which brings us to 13. And if you can imagine, three of them are actually going to be competing in the show. And,
Derek, that's crazy.
Derek Lunsford, Heidi Chupan, Brandon Curry. And then, you know, and then a lot of the familiar faces will be there, and Jay and Dexter and Ronnie and Samir and others. There'll be, a number of our past champions will be there. We have some really amazing moments planned to celebrate that history, celebrate those big wins by those champions. So if you're somebody who appreciates the rich history of bodybuilding and has been following the sport for a little bit, there'll be a lot of goosebumps, I think, in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think that's important for the new people to the sport to show them these champions, you know. And I mean, those were some amazing competitions back then. And when you think about like Larry Scott, the first winner, I mean, I don't know if you've ever read any of the stories about when he won that contest, but they said there was like a 20-minute standing ovation. I mean, these guys were gods back then, you know. So it's just an unbelievable how well they were received back then, you know.
It is. It's amazing. And when you think about how far we've come, we're still getting the ovations. We're giving out a lot more money. They're competing in front of massive crowds. You know, we put our tickets for our Saturday night Olympia finals on sale several months ago. And in 3 days, every single ticket that we had for sale was gone. And you think about how far we've come. And I'm convinced that we could put this thing in an arena or a stadium and we would still sell out the tickets. There's so much demand for the Olympia. And that's also a testament to the work that other promoters are doing to promote the sport in other parts of the world. The Olympia enjoys the benefits of the global popularity of fitness, of bodybuilding, and all the divisions. So it's very much a team sport when it comes to promoting. When the Olympia sells out, yeah, sure, it's because we have the best athletes in the world. We're the biggest, most prestigious event. But it's also a product of the work that is happening in places that nobody even talks about. I mean, there's all kinds of shows from Dubai to L.A. to Columbus to parts of Europe and Asia and down in Brazil and anywhere you could think of where they're growing these communities. And as a result, of course, the show, you know, at the top of the food chain benefits from that. But we're seeing growth all around. And that's incredibly encouraging. It's not all about the Olympia, but we're proud to do our part to try to, you know, set a standard for everyone else.
Yeah, bodybuilding has got to be bigger now than it's ever been, right? I mean, it seems like there's pro shows every single weekend somewhere around the world, like you said. And with all the different divisions that we have now, it's got to be huge compared to what it was ever has ever been before in the past.
It's massive. It really is. I mean, I'm just going to say it. There's no other way to put it. What Jim Mannion, Tyler Mannion have done around the world to bring the NPC, the Pro League, to different regions, different countries, different cities on any given Saturday night. There's several events going on. Remember it used to be where years ago, John, when we were kind of starting off doing this, we could all go to a city and we would all see each other, right? Mm-hmm. There's an event this weekend in Tampa. We'd go there and we would all see each other, all of us.
Yeah.
The downside to growth is if I meet you in Tampa for Tim Gardner's Tampa Pro, the chances are pretty good that many of the people that we're used to seeing are going to be divided around the world in other events. So we're not seeing each other the way we used to because there's so much growth. There's so many events and the caliber of the events has also improved. But, you know, there's downsides to growth too, because selfishly speaking, we love to connect. We would go to an event, we would all meet for dinner and we would tell stories and we would talk about our family. Amazing. That's not happening as much anymore because, like I said, on a given Saturday night, you could be in Tampa. I could be in LA. Bob Chick could be in Italy. And Sean Ray could be somewhere on the other side of the world. So that's kind of the way it is now. But overall, credit to what they're doing in Pittsburgh because it really has grown rapidly.
Yeah. Jim Mannion has really, since he started this in 1982, I believe. It's unbelievable what he's done to really grow the sport everywhere, you know, and how they've added all these different divisions and everything, you know.
Yep.
So talk about this year, Dan. I mean, you guys are back in Vegas now, and it sounds like you're going to be out there for a while now, right? Because you got a new venue at a new Resorts World, which is a new hotel.
So we're at Resorts World, and for those who aren't familiar with the latest around the Las Vegas Strip, it is important to mention that Resorts World is located on the side of the strip where the Las Vegas Convention Center is, where the Fontainebleau is. And that was only built about 3.5 years ago for $4.5 billion. It was the second most amount of money that's ever been spent on a hotel on the strip. And it was only beat by the Fontainebleau only because that came after. But this hotel is really something. The things that we're going to be able to do from a production standpoint, just an overall fan experience standpoint, it has some of the best restaurants in town. It's home to Zouk Nightclub, which is like the number one nightclub in all of Las Vegas, if you're into that sort of thing. There's just lots of, it's home to one of the best spas in Las Vegas, one of the best gyms in Las Vegas. And I'm not just saying this in promoter speak. This hotel is known for having so many things that really make being there easy and a whole lot of fun. And then, of course, they have a great theater that hosts some of the biggest productions, the biggest acts, biggest entertainers in the world. So we're going to be using that theater. And then across the street, and when I say across the street, it's across the street, but it's borderline a walk because, you know, Vegas across the street isn't just across the street, but the Las Vegas Convention Center is over there. And it's a great home. Of course, the Olympia Expo was at the Las Vegas Convention Center years ago. You guys remember. So we're bringing it back to the South Hall of the LVCC. And it's going to be a great home for what's turned out to be a highly evolved Olympia Expo. This is not your grandmother's Olympia Expo. I'll tell you that. We have a lot more going on. Tim Gardner has been a big part of helping us grow that expo with Ken Flynn and that whole team out there. And it's just turned into something pretty impressive. There's events covering all corners of fitness and physical culture and combat sports and just about anything you could think of. It's all going to be at the Olympia this weekend. So the Olympia, I know, has long been viewed very much as a bodybuilding event, but man, it sure has evolved into something far greater. And I can't wait for everybody to come and see it. We have more exhibitors this year than we've had in 10 years. Wow. So that's an exciting thing. And there's just a lot of excitement surrounding the event. And the most important thing is the city of Las Vegas as a whole has really gotten behind it. They actually, I don't know if you guys caught it, but a few weeks ago they had us out.
Yeah.
And they presented us with the key to the city, the key to the Las Vegas Strip, which is a very rare honor that's given only to specific things and specific celebrities in the city who really make an impact on their community, on their commerce. And we're very grateful for that. The commissioner, the mayor, they were all there, the president of the hotels. And they all were quick to point out the impact that the Olympia has had. We've been in Las Vegas, I think, 23 times, which means we've brought every bit of a million plus people to that city who eat in their restaurants, stay in their hotels, watch their shows. And we become a real partner to that city. And it's nice to see them recognizing the Olympia much the same way they would recognize the Super Bowl or any other major event that comes to their city. So, we're feeling really good about the relationship. And you asked the question about, are we going to be there for the foreseeable future? I'll just respond by saying, I hope so. I really do. Because when you have my job and every single year you have to hit reset and plan an event in a new location, it's a whole lot of work. And we're not afraid to do it. We have an amazing team. I'm so grateful to work with Jake Wood and the rest of our group to really try to do some special things. Jake is amazing that he gives us the ability and the resources to do some really cool things. But it's definitely ideal if we could stay in the same spot for a couple years, just so we can tweak and have the opportunities to improve on that. And also enable me to save some of the gray hair that I'm growing from having to hit start over every single year. Because anybody who's out there in the event business, I don't care if you're planning a birthday party or the royal wedding, it doesn't matter. When you're doing it at the same place every year, it makes life a whole lot easier.
I'll bet. And
we haven't had a chance to do that in many years.
Plus, it seems like it's at a better date this year, too, because it's in October. And I think that would be a better time to go out there. I mean, I know you guys had it in December a couple of years ago, and you know, that's kind of off season, I guess, you know, close to Christmas and stuff. And then last year was in November. Yep. So I think having it in October is kind of brings it back to where the Olympia used to be, right? Because it used to always be in September, October.
I like October. I think it's good because it keeps people away from the holidays.
Yeah.
And we understand companies don't want to invest time and resources to put on a full blown exhibition close to December. It also keeps us in a nice climate. Vegas in October is beautiful.
And, yeah, it is.
Blue skies, you know, 70 degree weather. It's gorgeous. So that way you're still using the pools. You're still enjoying the day clubs, the nightclubs, the cabanas, the pool parties, all that other stuff. It still is a part of the Vegas experience. But you're also out of that summer heat because, hell, I've been going over there about every 4 weeks over the last 3 or 4 months. And I've been out there for some days that you could man, you could
brutal.
You could bake cookies on the floor. It really is something.
Yeah.
So I think October is going to be a great spot and a great time to bring everybody out there.
Yeah. Is that Chris Bumstead behind you there, Dan?
that is a Chris Bumstead cover. I got a Jake Cutler cover.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay.
You'll see over this shoulder a statue that's probably very familiar to a lot of your visitors. That is the Eugene Sandow Trophy, which, of course, we give out every year to the number one bodybuilder in the world. It is every bit of 40, 50 pounds. It's heavy.
Wow.
And I keep one in my office because when folks come in to visit, they always enjoy the photo op to take a picture with the Sandow Trophy. And the base of the Sandow Trophy actually has inscribed all the prior winners. So it's a very special treasure, and I'm proud to have it here in my office. But this year's Olympia Trophy, this year's Sandow Trophy, which will be given to Mr. Olympia next month, because it's the 60th, we're going to do something that we've only done one other time for the 50th, and it is actually going to be dipped in gold. So,
oh, okay. I remember that when you did that.
What's that, John?
I said, I remember when you did that for the 50th. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Phil's a little bit upset because Phil liked being the only one that had the gold Sandow. So unfortunately, unless Phil wants to come out of retirement and try to win it this year, someone named Derek or Hottie or Andrew Jacked or Samson Dada or Nick Walker or whomever is going to stake claim to a gold Sandow, we'll have to find out. But it's beautiful. I just saw it. It just came off the manufacturing place, and it really came out beautifully.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah, I mentioned Chris because I was just going to say, you know, with the now we're in a whole different era with the magazines gone and we have social media. And of course, Chris is the leader. I think he's got to be the most popular person in the fitness industry with 24 million followers on Instagram. And I just saw he did his press conference today announcing he's with Gymshark. I don't know if you saw that.
I did. And how lucky they are to have him. Yeah. Chris has been such a great champion and such a good friend. He's always makes himself available. He, of course, became a father this year. So there's just a lot of really exciting things going on in Chris's life. And we're excited to see if Chris could come back and win another title. I still remember a number of years ago when we were talking, Jim Mannion, Tyler, Bob, all of us, we were sitting around talking about this new division called Classic Physique. And
yeah,
we were trying to make sense of it at that time. And then we decided to bring it into the Olympia. So that way we could crown a Classic Physique Olympia champion. And I never would have imagined that the creation of that title would have turned somebody into a megastar
way
it has Chris. And Chris deserves credit for that, because not only has he done the work, but he's also put himself out there in a way that makes people really connect with him. And he's got a real authenticity. And I like Chris very much. And it'll be interesting to see. He's going to have his work cut out for him, though. There's a lot of really good challenges coming on this year. And Chris is trying to hang on. So I'd love to see if he could pull off another one. But it's not going to be easy. And it's not a foregone conclusion. He still has some work to do. But I'm real proud of Chris. He's made an incredible life for his family. And he has also showed other competitors who come along, this is how you do it. And he's kind of rewritten the playbook. I saw that news from Chris today, and I'm really happy for him and everybody over there at Gymshark as well.
I was a little worried. I was thinking maybe he's going to renounce that he's not going to compete, you know, but then I was like, I'm looking at the training videos of him training, and he's training so hard. I figured that wasn't the case. So,
yeah, I would have liked to think I would have gotten the courtesy heads up on that.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't as nervous about it, but that would have been unfortunate. But look, it would have been to somebody else's benefit, because one thing that we've learned in the world of bodybuilding, and look, I love Chris Bumstead. I love Arnold. I love Lee Haney. I love Jay Cutler. I love all these guys. But what we have learned is no one is bigger than the sport, because as those eras have passed, and we got past the people, when Arnold was ready to retire, people thought, what's going to happen to bodybuilding now? When Jay Cutler was getting ready to retire, when Ronnie Coleman was getting ready to retire, these were such larger than life figures in the sport. And people were wondering what's going to happen now that these guys are no longer part of it. And what we have learned is, with respect to all of them, it doesn't matter, because the passion and the support for bodybuilding and fitness and all the things that we do, it's so great and it's so vast that it's larger than any one competitor. And that's why, I'll be honest with you, I know a lot of promoters, they get really worked up over who competes in their show and who doesn't. And, you know, they get really worked up about it, almost to the point where it's insane how much some promoters get, dare I say, their panties in a bunch over who's going to compete in their show. But to be honest with you, put on a great show, put on a great production, and whoever's on that stage is on that stage. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. And we've learned that. I remember one of the first Olympias that I produced, I think it was 2019. That year, our reigning champion wasn't in the lineup. He had, you know, legal issues that he was going through.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah.
And Ty Green, who people were hoping was going to be there, wasn't there.
Yeah.
Phil Heath wasn't there. All the biggest names weren't there for different reasons. They were all – and then we ended up with a lineup that a lot of people were saying was one of the weakest lineups we've had, and we heard all the criticisms coming in. Oh, this year's lineup's going to be terrible and this and that and all that.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it was at the Orleans Arena. I'll never forget it. I'm standing there and I'm looking around this arena, and I've told this story before, and I'm looking at all these big names seated in the first few rows of the venue. And I'm looking on the stage where a lot of the big names were not there. And yet every seat in the building was packed. The place was intense. And when Brandon Curry won the title, he was Mr. Olympia. He was the number one bodybuilder in the world, and he was treated like it. And it was such an incredible moment. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't. That's why people say, are you worried? What's going to happen with that division when Chris retires? What's going to happen when Derek moves? It doesn't matter, because there are great, talented, passionate fans and athletes coming up right behind them. And I see no signs of any of it slowing down.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad what you mentioned about Chris too, how he's handled himself and how he's given the example.
Yep.
I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's so grounded, and he hasn't let this go to his head at all. If anyone can let it go to his head, it would have been him, you know, with more followers than anybody. But he knows what's important. He knows what's, you know, the important things in his life, and he keeps that in perspective. So credit to him for sure. He's a great champion.
He really is. He really is. And you know what? This current crop of champions, if you look up and down the division, there's 11 divisions. If you count wheelchair, it's 11 divisions in the Olympia. And you look, you know, and I'm not going to name them all, but, you know, you look at the bikini Olympia champion, Jen Dory, a great ambassador for that division. Derek Lunsford carries himself like a champion. He's been wonderful. He's really done all the great things this year to put the sport in the best possible light. And then you just go on and on. Of course, Bumstead and Andrea Shaw on the Miss Olympia side, and Ryan Terry has done a great job in the men's physique, and I could go through all of them, but we have a great group of champions this year. I told them that at the champion seminar that we have on Sunday after the show. I told them that I was so proud of that group, because I had seen all of them over the years do hospital visits and lift up their fans and just do all the right things to carry themselves like champions. I've seen them go speak at schools and educate kids on nutrition and living their healthiest, strongest life. I've seen all of that from this group of champions. So for me, that the fact that they won, I thought it was just a great opportunity for the sport to have individuals who understand that role in those positions to spread the message. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. Chris and all of them, they've all done a great job this year.
Yeah. So what are your goals then, Dan, for the Olympia? I mean, it seems like it's such a big production, and you got so many divisions and everything, and you've done a fantastic job with it. It seems like it's getting bigger and bigger every year, despite having to move it from venue to venue, because you had to go to Florida a few times with the pandemic and things like that. But you continue to move it forward. Do you have any bigger long range goals for it? I mean, it's such a huge thing right now with all the different divisions and everything.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's always goals. The objective at the end of the day, it's always simple. Connect with new audiences. Figure out new ways to go and connect with different groups, connect with different sports, tie yourself closer to the entertainment industry, connect with other fitness disciplines, connect with different types of media who connect with different parts of the world. You just kind of do that every single day. It's just like training and building a Mr. Olympia physique. Every day you get up, you go to the gym, and you just work on things. You just work on your bringing up your hamstrings, and you work on your conditioning, and you look at rounding out the muscle, and you work at you focus on how the muscle's laying beneath the skin, and you focus on all the minutiae. And little by little by little, you just kind of do it. And that's how we've approached this thing. We just want to connect with new audiences, because we find my formula has been real simple. The more audiences you connect with, the more people that you inspire, the more people that you educate and motivate, the more people who get to stick their toes in this water, right? And experience all of this. the more things come of it, the more new sponsors enter into the equation, the more new revenue comes in. And with new revenue creates different opportunities to give out more prize money, to create higher quality productions. So there's just so many things, but it all comes down to just growth. And when I go to the Olympia each year, and I'm sure you've been the last few years, you see the celebrities there. There's representatives from production studios. There's individuals who want to use our audience to promote their movie projects. And the best part about it is they are coming from different categories in different parts of the world. When you look at the Olympia logo right now, two of our major sponsors, Integral Medica is the largest supplement company in Brazil, and Nutech is the leading equipment manufacturer, amazing company, in Korea. And that didn't used to be the case. It used to be where you'd go and you look at the main sponsors of the Olympia, and it was just four or five American supplement brands. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing new categories, new parts of the world, new languages, new currencies, all this stuff. And it's really lent a lot to how much we're growing. They're seeing it at the Pro League, at the NPC. They're seeing it across the board. And I will say this to anybody who's promoting other events, because I know a lot of companies, they look to us for guidance. Don't always go back to the familiar places. Don't always go back to the familiar places to promote your shows. Don't always go back to the familiar places to find sponsors. Have the courage to go somewhere new. And even if it's a little uncomfortable, and even if it's culturally a little bit different, go there and you'll be amazed, because there's nothing more gratifying than getting off an airplane in a part of the world and seeing the way this sport is received, seeing how much it means to people. I know you've traveled, John, you've seen it, you've experienced it. You've been a very high profile fixture in bodybuilding for a long time. And you've seen the way you can get off a plane in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and you see how they respond to you there, or you can go to Tokyo. It really is an incredible thing to see. And that's a big part of what we do. I have it in my heart that the Olympia in the not so distant future will be held in a stadium. I think that's how big we can go with this. Now, a lot of people might say, well, a stadium isn't ideal for a bodybuilding show, and there's probably some issues there. It would probably have to be an indoor stadium, right? But I look at WrestleMania. I look at some of these other shows. I know that the UFC this weekend will be at the Sphere, so that's going to be amazing for the UFC. But I think that's what it's all about. It's going places. And I'm not afraid of seating capacity. I'm convinced that if there were 38,000 seats, I'd sell them. If there were 50,000 seats, I would sell them. Of course, now we're still in that world of Vegas theater type production venues, which have smaller capacities. So we can sell those out with our eyes closed in 2 or 3 days. But I really think that there's opportunities to go for it and just bring massive numbers of people into these buildings and just be a part of an Olympia that would just change everything in one night. And that's sort of a little bit of a bucket list goal of mine. Okay. I don't talk about it much, but we'll get there. But in the meantime, we're just trying to continue to do it better.
Wow. Would you ever think about moving it to like Dubai or someplace like that? You know, because I know Dubai has had some good bodybuilding shows there. There's a lot of money out there.
Yeah, we have so much respect for some people in those parts of the world. Dubai is a great example. There's just tremendous passion over there. Business resources, great leadership over there. We have great relationships over there. So yeah, it's definitely something we talk about. I know Jake is devoted to the idea of exploring new ways to grow the Olympia and to do that. You just have to find the right way to do it, because remember, when you do something like that, then you're going to alienate a lot of long-standing, loyal attendees, sponsors, exhibitors. So you have to figure out a way to do it. There's also some scenarios where maybe we could potentially take a small part of the Olympia experience and bring that to another part of the world. So that way there could be real Olympia titles being presented in other parts of the world while we still have, you know, the Mr. Olympia or the Olympia weekend as we know it here in the States. So there's a lot of scenarios that we're constantly exploring.
Okay. But,
you can be sure that I say more now more than ever, there's a very open-minded approach to all things. We have found that we have been presented with so many challenges over the last few years. And we're fortunate enough to have overcome so many things that we're almost fearless now. We're almost fearless. We've reached a point where we're not afraid to test certain scenarios and to go into different environments and to get out of our comfort zone, because we have found that We have performed and we have delivered, and we want to continue to raise the bar, and we do not want to get comfortable. So yeah, don't be shocked if something like that happens. I just don't know when it's going to be.
Okay. All right. Awesome. All right, Dan. Well, thank you for joining me for this interview. I'm sure you got a lot more interviews coming up over the next few weeks to talk about the Olympia, the 60th Olympia. And we'll look forward to watching it. If you're not going to be there in Las Vegas, then it'll be on pay-per-view, but it's going to be an event you don't want to miss for sure.
Yeah. And I'll also add that one new thing that we're doing this year, which is going to be pretty amazing because the tickets sold so fast. And quite frankly, we know tickets to the Olympia are expensive. We know that.
Yeah.
We are producing for the first time ever at the host venue, the host hotel, the official Olympia watch party, which is going to be cool. Now, this isn't just a room with a couple TVs. This is Zouk Nightclub, which is the hottest, most technologically advanced night spot in all of Vegas. And there are viewing screens everywhere you can look, above your head, to your left, to your right, to the floor, to everywhere. Incredible production value. And there's bar service and food. And
it's going to
be an exciting night. And I'll be honest, and so what we're going to do, and then we'll have celebrities there, we'll have hosts there, there's going to be a lot there. But I'll be honest, if I would, and I'm not just saying this to promote it, if I weren't in the position that I was in where I had to go work at the event, right, I think no one is going to have more fun that night than the people attending the official watch party. It's going to be a really good time, a very comfortable environment, a lot of great energy, a lot of great socializing and networking. You could have a few drinks while you're there and just have a good time. Zouk Nightclub. And to get, there are still some tickets for that. You can go to MrOlympia.com, go to the tickets tab. And while you're there, click on the watch party. And like I said, if you haven't already gotten your tickets for Saturday night, the bad news is you're not gonna be able to get them because they're sold out. But the good news is show up at the watch party and experience that and be a part of bodybuilding and fitness fans, beautiful people, and all kinds of cool stuff are going to be going on at the watch party at Zouk while the Saturday night show is happening. So you'll enjoy the hell out of that. So that's just something I'll put in your ear. If
are they gonna close the club then? It's just going to be the watch party?
Even better than that. So the place is going to be closed off from like 6 o'clock till the end of the Olympia finals, which will be about, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then once the show is over, then the doors open for a regular night at Zouk Nightclub, which, as you know, is a crazy party. But if you're already inside, you don't have to go out and go back in. So your ticket to the Olympia watch party will get you in for the whole night. So if you want to stay in there for 5, 6, 7 hours and just party till you know when, you can do that. So yeah, so you can get best of all worlds. And that's telling you, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Yeah.
Plus you got the food and a drink.
All of it. Yeah, no, it's going to be different. I'll tell you, it's going to be a bodybuilding environment with elements that we've never experienced. And I will say the viewing experience there, I can't even put it into words. We actually put out a teaser video. I think it's up on my Instagram. You guys can check it out. But I put up a teaser video, which kind of shows a couple shots of what that space looks like.
Wow.
And it's jaw-dropping in terms of what the overall experience is like at Zouk Nightclub, which happens to be at Resorts World. So if you're staying there and some of your friends are going to the show and you just maybe didn't want to get a ticket, didn't spend money on a ticket, couldn't get a ticket, whatever it is, just go over to the watch party. I think it's $75. Go in there and have a great time.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a great idea. All right, I'll put all the links to everything in the description here. But Dan, thanks again for joining me on the show and wish you the best with another successful Olympia production this year. I'll be out there checking it out, of course. And I'm sure everybody who can't make it out there will just watch it on the pay-per-view as they always do. Best of luck to you, Dan, in the next few weeks getting everything ready. I know you're super busy, and I appreciate your time here.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate all your support of not just the Olympia, but also the sport of bodybuilding. We always enjoy following your content.
All right. Thank you, Dan. All right. All right. Take care, Dan.
Cool. Good stuff.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And thank you to Dan Solomon for joining us for the interview. The Mr. Olympia this year should be a really, really big event. Like I said, I'll be out there, so I will let you guys know how that goes when I get back. All right, let's read some old Muscle Builders here. This first one is from the January 1969 issue of Muscle Builder. It is called The Frosting on the Cake, and it was written by Dick Tyler, and it was about the 1968, what they called the IFBB Show of Shows. This was the Mr. Olympia, the Mr. World, and the Mr. America all in one night at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. So it says, Chuck Sipes had just scored a brilliant victory in the Mr. World contest by not only taking the title, but most of the subdivisions as well. How could all this be topped? After all, who could follow Chuck Sipes except for his autograph? Producer-director Bud Parker was determined to find out, so after a 10-minute intermission, he started the second half with an unbelievable foot-juggling act. Then it was time for Chuck Sipes again, this time in his role of strongman. Unfortunately, he had hurt his shoulder, so he was unable to attempt the advertised 600-pound bench press. He had worked up to 570 in the lift before he was injured in training. This didn't prevent him from displaying his great bar-bending, chain-breaking ability. However, the audience was delighted. He is undoubtedly one of the most popular champions around. He is the ideal picture of the man with great muscles and Herculean power. The only thing that could follow Chuck Sipes again was an aggregate of close to 40 of this country's finest bodybuilders. They would now compete for the oldest and most honored title of them all, Mr. America. Several of the faces were familiar. They had been through the bodybuilding wars and were back again for one more turn. While winning is exhilarating, there can only be a few big ones. The vast majority must be losers who have the courage to come back. This type of courage is what makes champions. In the prejudging, I thought that Zane should take the title and Zabel Kwaszewski most muscular. This year, I wasn't judging and well remembered how cards could change from the afternoon prejudging to the judging at the actual show. Watching it out from front gave me a completely different perspective. Johnny Maldonado was incredible. I mean that. He has done something in the past year that placed him out of the everyday class into championship status. His muscles were thick and dense. Each one was separated from the other by a chasm of delineation. On top of this, each was great size. If he improves much more, he may someday be a Mr. Olympia. Unfortunately for Johnny, he was in the same class as Rock Stonewall. Stonewall in shape is an almost insurmountable barrier. This night, The Rock was in shape, and he beat out Maldonado for the victory in the short class Mr. America, while Warren Frederick took third. The next class was by far the toughest. Competing for the medium height division were men such as Dan Mackey, fresh from his win in the IFBB Mr. Western America contest, Pete Caputo, the new IFBB Mr. Eastern America, Zabel Kwaszewski, John DeCola in his first IFBB competition, and Frank Zane. Each of these men was in the best condition of his life, which made it even tougher to choose. Caputo has great shape and separation, but lacks a little definition and could use a little more deltoid development. Dan Mackey looked good enough to place high or win almost any class, but he didn't quite have it for this one tonight. As for Zabo, he doesn't have the Mr. America ideal physique, I suppose. All he has is the greatest definition and separation on any human body that I have ever seen and still had skin on it. John DeCola looked so good that some of the judges felt he should win. It was Zane, however, who had the class of the class. He just had too much of everything in every department not to win. As it turned out, Zane won the medium class with DeCola second and Caputo third. In the tall division, it was Don Peters winning with Richard Gioffu taking second and Robert Woods Jr. third. Now for the big winners, Frank Zane was crowned the new IFBB Mr. America to the cheers of thousands. Zabel Kwaszewski was chosen the most muscular man in America and won, you'll never guess, best abdominals. Best arms was won by John DeCola. Best back, Rock Stonewall. Best chest, Mike Katz. And best legs, Pete Caputo. The best poser of both the Mr. World and the Mr. America contest was Frank Zane. Wasn't this enough contest for anyone? No, indeed. Now came the IFAW Arm Wrestling Championships. Eliminations were held earlier in the day, leaving just four men to compete for the world title on the stage. Another report goes into great detail on this contest, which was filled with thrills and mixed with some hot tempers. Maurice L. Baker, a 245-pounder, emerged champion of the world. He did it in such a convincing manner that I doubt if anyone will argue the fact, at least for a while. Someone will always be looking him up now, however, to carve a reputation on his tendons. Well, what could be left? The act that none can follow, the Mr. Olympia. The greatest compliment I can imagine was paid to Sergio Oliva when the leading bodybuilders in the world refused to compete against him. It must be something to be that great. Sergio showed him why by literally giving birth to a new muscle before the eyes of the audience. Honest, I've never seen anything like it. Now, an unusual thing happened. After Sergio finished posing, the lights were turned on and he asked for the microphone. And then, with that great accent of his, he told everyone that he was soon to be married. After the cheers, he asked everyone to listen carefully to what he was going to say. From there, he proceeded to tell the throng that he used weeder supplements. Ah, come on, came back the wise remarks. People just can't believe or think it's too corny to say something like that. Sergio had guts and he wanted to set the record straight that he didn't use other supplements, as has been claimed. All the remarks came to a complete surprise to me. After all, how many men will openly stand before thousands and give credit where it's due? It's a forgotten art that was revived by the greatest of champions. All of a sudden, a voice comes from the audience. That's a lie. You could have cut the tension with a knife. Those who had gone to the dressing rooms ran back down the hallways to see what was developing. Sergio told the man who yelled to come on stage and say that. Most arrived just in time to see little Dan Lurie climb upon the stage and take the microphone. Lurie claimed that he had paid Sergio for his endorsements, which Sergio promptly denied, saying that he had been paid for stories and photos, but had never endorsed Lurie's products. Lurie congratulated Joe Weider on putting on a great show. Amidst a chorus of boos, I looked at Lurie and the whole sad spectacle and felt embarrassed for the guy. Why does he do it? Why does he do it? You have to feel sorry for him. Thus ended one of the most exciting shows ever produced. No one can ever top what happened here this memorable night, not even Joe Weider, I think. All right. Blast from the past, 1968. All right, let's read this article about Arnold. And like I said, this comes from the May 1969 issue of Muscle Builder and Power, and it's written by Joe Weider. It says, I often ponder with amazement how many lives have been completely transformed just by a first-time perusal of Muscle Builder and Mr. America magazines. This is the astounding story of one great champion, perhaps the most phenomenal of modern times, whose life was irrevocably changed by this simple act. Some years ago, I decided to make available our ever-advancing Weider techniques to bodybuilders all over the world by enfranchising publishers in various countries to print our magazines in their own national languages, and most importantly, in the idioms that could be most quickly understood by bodybuilders of any nationality. That this has been outstandingly successful is attested by the thousands of great physique champions who appear in IFBB muscle shows and contests in every country of the world. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Universe, is such a champion, and he began his already fabulous career in the muscle world by casually picking up a copy of Der Muscle Builder one day during a study period in high school. Der Muscle Builder is, of course, the German edition of our own Muscle Builder magazine. Arnold even then was a big boy, a tall, gangling lad of 15, and what attracted him to Der Muscle Builder was a picture of equally big Reg Park on the cover. Reg, who up until now has always been regarded as one of the world's most massively built physique stars. Since Arnold's burning desire and greater problem at that time was to flesh out his gigantic frame with healthy muscle, he impatiently flipped through the pages until he came upon the story of this fantastically built English Mr. Universe. Here he felt could be the breakthrough to muscle gains he had sought for so very long. In the small city of Graz, Austria, where Arnold Schwarzenegger was born and has lived most of his life, bodybuilding as such was little known. However, that part of Austria has long been famous for noted strongmen such as Maxix and Sandow, Swoboda and the Saxons. Old legends die hard, and the charisma of such famous men of strength has continued to exert its spell. It's no wonder, then, that Arnold's father and his brother Meinhard, who was just a year older than Arnold, were brought up in the strongman tradition. At the age of 62, Arnold's father can easily lift 200 pounds overhead. His brother is a boxer, the second best in Austria, and together they encourage Arnold to join the local weightlifting club with them. This Arnold did. When he joined, he could press about 100 pounds, and while he grew somewhat in strength for the year afterward, he still was unable to press more than 165. Strength came by degrees, but there was no attendant increase in muscular size, in the sheer massiveness that Arnold believed he needed for his tremendous height and bone structure. At the moment he discovered Der Muscle Builder, these were his measurements. Height 6'2", weight 154, today he's 250, arms 12 and a half, today that figure is reversed, 21 and a half, chest 40, today a stupendous 56, waist 30, still only 32 inches with a 54-pound gain in weight, thighs 20, today a magnificent 27 and a half, and calves 15, today they are 18. American bodybuilders familiar with our before and after cases will straightaway realize that his before measurements were substandard for even beginning bodybuilders of even less height than Arnold's. It's clear that 15-year-old Arnold had quite a way to go. Fortunately for him, Weider has made the going great, for by carefully analyzing various Weider principles as they were published in Der Muscle Builder, and by applying them experimentally in his own case,
Arnold has never seen a day go by without making a decided improvement in his physique. Possibly without realizing it, he became an instinctive trainer, that special breed of weeder wildcat who enthusiastically adopts only those techniques which work effectively while discarding those which work less well or not as fast. The hardcore weeder principles which have worked best for Arnold are the flushing principle, working one muscle area at a time until it has been gorged with powerful supplies of muscle-building blood and pumped to maximum size. The cheating principle, adopting a looser exercise form by slightly swinging or swaying the body to assist in getting a greater weight started in any exercise in which a very heavy poundage is used. This builds muscular bulk. The peak contraction principle, in which one takes advantage of an already flushed, already pumped muscle area by performing exaggerated squeezes or cramping or partial movements at the apex of each full repetition to produce a high peak of exceptional muscular definition, which is not possible with the standard performance of regular repetitions. This builds muscle shape. The contraction principle, through which the bodybuilder focuses almost shut out concentration on the muscle being exercised. In his mind's eye, he now sees the entire range of the muscle and how effectively it is being bombed through every inch of the rep from beginning to end. Because he concentrates so deeply and can thereby isolate the muscle for a fuller attack, he can bring the most powerful tension to bear upon it throughout his range. This permits all-out attack and prevents wasted effort and builds muscle definition. The double split routine, in the regular split routine, the upper body is exercised in isolation one day, the legs the next, continuing in this alternating manner for 6 workout days per week. This gives the entire body 3 complete workouts, which become more rugged in effect by reason of the staggering of the routine, which permits more to be done for each part of the body. Heavy weights can be handled, more sets and reps are possible, with fewer and shorter pauses between sets and exercises, thus producing an even greater pump for massiveness. While this type of exercising is quite effective for most bodybuilders, it is often not enough for one of Arnold's needs. A bodybuilder of such towering height and vaster muscular potential and a need for greater bulk must work twice as hard as one of the more average height and less massive bone structure. Thus, he favors the double split routine because he knows he cannot possibly cover half of his body in one workout, nor as completely as he would like even in the regular split routine. He therefore limits his bombing to just 2 areas in one workout, returning to the gym later in the day for a workout of 2 or other areas. In the meantime, he rests completely and builds up his nutrition with important food supplements so that he can hit the ensuing workout later in the day as hard as he did the first. When I evolved this double split routine about 2 years ago, a great hue and cry arose in the muscle world. There were those who said that no one could train that hard and long and get the best results. But I believe that there were many men who could become greater champions right then if only they would work their muscles far harder than they had been and yet still be working within reasonable limits of energy and endurance. It all boils down to what is reasonable and what is practical and effective for a particular individual. For that, you must experiment. You must adopt the Weider instinctive training principle. I still believe that man doesn't use all of his fantastic power and that by pushing himself within reason and getting enough rest and eating a wholly nutritious diet, he can achieve miracles yet undreamed of. The double split routine may just be the answer, as it has been for Arnold Schwarzenegger. He trains about 4 hours a day, 2 hours per workout, 6 days a week. He bombs 1 or 2 body parts for about 2 hours in the morning before going to work. After work, he bombs another 2 body parts for about 2 hours. After dinner and an evening of relaxation, he works his calves every night before retiring. There are many who fritter away 4 hours every day in a gym in the long continuous workout, interspersed with gossip and too much dilly-dallying. By following a more uptight routine divided into morning and afternoon sectors, a sudden surge in muscle gains would occur. Arnold defines reasonableness in his case like this. I believe that the muscles must be constantly pumped up and feel as though they have been freshly worked all day long. I believe that a slight muscle ache must be felt after a workout because I know this slight ache proves that I have worked the muscles hard. I believe if there is no pump, there is no muscular growth. And so I am aggressive about my workouts. I keep pushing, always with heavier weights and with very scientific bodybuilding diets that I follow and with my own eccentric, if you like, methods of relaxing, plus 8 or 9 hours of sound sleep each night.
I believe I achieved the acme of reasonableness in my own particular case. Taking Arnold's points individually, let's look into that amazing Mr. Universe diet. How much protein do you eat each day? 100 grams, 150, 200? Maybe what you eat is adequate for you. Maybe it is not, particularly if you train hard and are not experiencing the greatest possible gains. But Arnold Schwarzenegger pegs his protein intake each day at 350 grams. How on earth does he do it? To the average individual whose entire protein intake each day may reach 100 grams maximum, the idea of consuming 350 protein grams seems impossible. And it really would be if those 350 grams were derived solely from heavy, solid protein such as meat. The digestive system simply could not handle so much solidity. The churning process would become clogged, and much of the potential would pass off as waste. But that's why Weider developed our now famous food supplements, Super Pro 101, Crash Weight Gain Formula Number 7, Instant Nature Breakfast, and the essentially power-up supplement, InstaPower, has a high protein quotient. Arnold adds these supplements in auxiliary smaller meals throughout the day, generally about 3 hours apart, to his regular table food meals, in which meat, of course, is a daily staple. Breakfast, he arises about 7 in the morning. Instant Nature Breakfast, one container, meat and eggs. And then a German-Swiss cereal called Bircher Muesli, which is comprised of rolled oats, ground nuts of many kinds, dried raisins, dried apples, and seeds of many kinds, such as wheat germ. This delicious cold cereal, you add milk only, can be purchased in health food stores, plus a vitamin and mineral tablet and one protozyme tablet to assist in protein and starch digestion. At 9 a.m. before his morning sector of his double split routine, Arnold takes InstaPower, one container. Arnold usually sips half of this before his workout and sips the remainder during the workout. At 11 a.m., Instant Nature Breakfast, one container, or Super Pro 101. At 2 p.m., Germans and Austrians eat a late lunch. A light protein such as tuna fish or cottage cheese, a small green vegetable salad with lemon juice and oil, and a fresh piece of raw fruit. After work, a half hour before the second sector of the double split, Arnold has another container of InstaPower sipped as before, half before the workout, the remainder during the workout. Dinner at 7 p.m., a full pound of beef. Arnold prefers roast braten, which is a Viennese sirloin steak pan broiled, with a few tablespoons of peanut oil in order to gain needed unsaturated fatty acids to offset the animal fat quotient in the beef. A baked potato with corn oil margarine for topping. A mixed salad of potatoes, red beets, and cucumbers. A typical Viennese dessert such as Kaiserschmarrn or Schlierlachen, a pastry cone filled with whipped cream. Or Nestorte. You may substitute any kind of dry, nutty cake. When Arnold was trying to gain weight, he not only ate dessert just mentioned, but sipped a container of Crash Weight Gain Formula Number 7 as a chaser. This was so effective that now at his present weight of 250, he no longer needs to rely on Crash Weight daily, only when he finds his weight dropping below the 250 he likes to maintain throughout the year. He always takes a protozyme tablet after his big dinner. Just before his calf workout, before retiring, a container of Super Pro 101 to provide protein insurance for the day. His total protein consumption is 350 grams per day. Now Arnold alters his diet a few weeks before a contest or an exhibition. Then we find him fining down, trying for the greatest cuts. At this time, he omits many of the high carbogram foods, boosts his protein intake with Super Pro 101, and includes muscle density formula RX7. This latter supplement is substituted for InstaPower before and during each workout sector, and in place of Instant Nature Breakfast at the 11 a.m. feeding. Because he then works in high sets and reps with lighter poundages, he does not require the super energy boost necessary when working with the heaviest weights. Thus, muscle density formula RX7, which is formulated to help produce muscular definition in combination with brisk workout routines, is just what he needs. It is needless to add that when working for definition, Arnold omits desserts, such as the creamy Kaiserschmarrn, Schlierlachen or Nestorte, and substitutes an apple or pear or peach peeled at the table and eaten raw. In this way, he trims down a few pounds and has 100% more cuts than anyone else on the posing platform. Arnold Schwarzenegger's bodybuilding testament. Still only 21, Arnold Schwarzenegger has given much thought to more serious things about bodybuilding and these are some of them which he discussed with me recently. A, don't be a complainer. If you complain about one single thing in your workout is sure to be less effective. Psychologically, any kind of complaint is transmitted to the muscles, and they simply will not make the greatest possible effort. B, practice being happy. If you will think happy, if you will just convince yourself that everything is going along better than ever, it will. C, practice posing every workout. The greatest investment you can put into your home gym, except for a necessary exercising equipment, is a mirror on each of the opposite walls. Instead of hitting the shower after your last exercise, practice at least 15 minutes of posing. The double mirror will show you exactly what's happened during the workout, and you'll have a visible record of your daily improvement. Besides, posing makes it easy to appear in contests without that awful feeling of impending doom. D, move slowly at all other times than when you work out. If you're trying to gain weight, particularly, it's a good idea to laze around. Walk slowly. Just glide along. Don't get involved in outside activities to the point where you're dating, dancing, playing the minute you complete your workout. Take it easy. In this way, you will conserve vital energy for your workouts. E, get 9 hours sleep each night. Don't go to bed and lie there dreaming of tomorrow or even tomorrow's workout. A workout is something that cannot be dreamed. It must be executed, and all the dreaming in the world cannot make it otherwise. Go to bed to sleep. Simply and forcibly refuse to think of anything. Make your mind a blank, and you'll drift off to sound sleep and wake totally refreshed. F, concentrate deeply in your workouts. If you have the misfortune to train in a crowded gym, divorce your mind from every person around you. Think of only the muscle you are to exercise and the weight, sets, reps, and equipment to be used in it. G, never talk in workouts. You can politely refuse to talk to anyone in a gym. Tell your gabby friend that you want all your mental powers focused on the workout. Tell him that no one ever talked a good workout. Talking dispels concentration, and that you do not want. H, give credit where it's due. Don't harbor grudges. Don't be envious of other bodybuilders. Recognize that others have arrived in the muscle world, that they have worked honestly for their attainments. Don't eat your heart out because someone has a bigger arm than yours. Keep trying to build your own. I, force out extra reps whenever you can, remembering that these produce an even greater pump and a deeper muscle growth ache, the only valid symptoms that you are growing bigger and stronger. J, encourage some bodybuilder who is despairing over his lack of progress. If you believe you have some sound advice to offer, do so at the conclusion of your workout. You will inspire him, and in doing so, you will re-inspire yourself. No man ever stands so tall as when he stoops to help someone else. K, put some powerlifting into your workouts. Powerlifting has helped me so much in my search for the greatest muscular massiveness and power. I won the powerlifting championship of East Germany in 1968 with lifts of a 460 in the bench press, 500 in the squat, and 710 in the deadlift. I do not even remotely career in powerlifting, but I use it for getting the most out of bodybuilding. L, never be satisfied with merely good gains. Settle only for the greatest. M, train every day as though you had a contest coming up next week. Only in this way can you mentally wage an all-out war for the greatest gains in muscle building. The new Schwarzenegger phenomenon is yet to come. European standards in bodybuilding and physique ideals are somewhat different than ours. This is an aspect of muscle building that Arnold had not considered until just recently, and it was brought home to him quite dramatically. After he won his amateur British Mr. Universe last year, Reg Park engaged Arnold for some exhibitions in South Africa. And it was while he was in Johannesburg that Reg urged Arnold to come to the United States and train under my supervision to put the finishing touches to his fine physique necessary for winning international competition. Reg pointed out that the IFBB Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia contest is where the most exacting bodybuilding standards rule the day. That a champion may win many titles, but the greatest of all is the IFBB award. For it is at these contests that the world's best bodybuilders vie for that honor of honors. Anything that has been overlooked, even slightly, in the contestant's training career is sure to be noticed and commented upon, and therefore it is the catalyst that separates the true and worthy overall champion from the lesser ones. Of course, having won an extraordinary number of titles, Arnold did not heed Reg's advice at the time. After all, he was Junior Mr. Austria, Senior Mr. Austria. At 18, he won the Junior Best Built Man in Europe title, then Senior Mr. Europe. At 19, the second spot in the Mr. Universe contest in London, and, as you know, the amateur and professional Mr. Universe the following years.
But it was not until he was on the boards at the Miami Beach edition of the IFBB Mr. Universe contest that he realized the truth, and he felt the full impact of Reg's wise counsel. He lost to Frank Zane, who only a week before had taken the IFBB Mr. America title. Although totally dissimilar in types of build, Frank had that super something that took the award. It is not always the biggest man who wins the IFBB titles, but the man who is most perfectly developed through every phase of his muscularity. Frank is 4 inches shorter than Arnold, and he is a good 60 pounds lighter, but every inch of him is a champion, and every pound. And Arnold realized this as only a true champion can. Thus, it was he that approached me about coaching him. I suggested that he move to Santa Monica, California. It's just the right place for Arnold. At this time, he wanted to come to the United States to train with me. It was approaching winter, and I know that it's difficult for any bodybuilder, champion or not, to do his best in our inclement New York weather. Moreover, I am continually commuting from New York to Santa Monica. Our Weider West Coast office is there, as is Muscle Beach nearby. I felt that I would have more time to devote to him in California and that we should train together, not only in our Santa Monica gym, but more frequently on the sands of the beautiful beach, which is in throwing distance of our office. In addition, he would be among champion friends such as Dave Draper and Chuck Colras, Don Howarth and Reg Lewis, Don Peters and Joe Nista, to name just a few. Each of these is a great champion. All have won spectacular awards, and any of them would be glad to assist Arnold in his training when I would not be there to supervise. In this way, he will become familiar with other Weider principles and techniques, which will, of course, add inches of extra muscle to his astounding physique, and he will have this distinct advantage of daily competition with the greats of the West Coast. This is a healthy thing. Often, unless there is some kind of competition, any bodybuilder tends to lose some interest. Bodybuilders must be challenged at all times. It's really the prime motivating force that makes them grow bigger, stronger, more symmetrical, and more muscular. A year from now, you're going to see Arnold Schwarzenegger at the next IFBB Mr. Universe show. Wherever you live, I urge you now to plan to attend because you're going to see the most sensational phenomenon of the muscle world. It will be an occasion to remember all your life, for you will see a man who is absolutely the living end, the greatest figure of all time in muscle building. The photographs which accompany this article should be preserved and compared with those which will be made at the next Mr. Universe show. You will see then how Weider Advanced Techniques transforms a great champion into an incomparable one. His name will be Schwarzenegger. Will Arnold then remain here in the United States and become perhaps an American citizen? I think not. I have great plans for him. I want him to return to Europe and head our Weider Munich office. With the inspiration of his overwhelming physique, he will be of estimable value in encouraging thousands of young European bodybuilders to get the most from training with our Weider Space Age techniques. And by then, who will be the supreme authority in Europe on Weider training? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Wow, that's pretty wild. Going way back in time to 1969 to read the first article about Arnold. Of course, Arnold did stay in the United States and became not only a U.S. citizen, but the governor. All right. Let's read one more. This comes from the, I believe it was the summer issue. Is that what I said? Summer issue of Muscle Mag from 1975. This was volume one, number four. So this was only the fourth issue of Muscle Mag. And Rick Wayne wrote an article for Bob Kennedy for Muscle Mag. It said, "Don't Kid the Kid" by Rick Wayne. And there's a great picture of Arnold and Lou posing down at the 1974 Mr. Olympia. Arnold's doing a twisting tricep shot. And Lou's doing a side bicep shot. Great picture. It says, "There's only one man alive who can put an end to the win all ways of Winsome Arnold, and his name is not Ferrigno. No, sir. What's more, the Austrian knows it, only too well." Somehow, Arnold Schwarzenegger's piece on newcomer Lou Ferrigno in the January issue of Muscle Builder reminds one of Norman Mailer's reference to a book by Maurice Zolotto in the life of every man's love affair with America, Marilyn Monroe. Zolotow's book is able to make another biographer wistful, for if a few of his best stories are true, how nice they might be for one's own use. It's just that one cannot depend on them. They have in the main been written by Marilyn, which is to say, by Marilyn as told to Ben Hecht, a prodigiously factoidial, facts which have no existence before appearing in a magazine or newspaper, creations which are not so much lies as a product to manipulate emotion in the silent majority, Enterprise, printed as a Sunday supplement pieces in 1954. Hecht was never a writer to tell the truth, when a concoction could put life in his prose, and Marilyn had been polishing her fables for years. No team of authors contributes more to the literary smog that hangs over legend than Marilyn Ben Hecht. Until Arnold von Tyler von Mose von who the hell knows. I strongly suspect Arnold's enjoying a private joke when he writes for our consumption. I expect Lou Ferrigno to provide the greatest challenge of my career. I saw the handwriting on the wall to Mr. International 1974 show. The message wasn't very nice. Who's kidding whom, for Christ's sake? Not me. I prefer instead to believe Colin Sheard, an English contributor to Health and Strength, when he relates how Arnold in 1968 told him, "I will win the Mr. Olympia title three times." Attaboy. It wasn't so much what the youth said that floored the old campaigner. Rather, it was the way he said it, quietly. So quietly, recalls Sheard, despite the proximity of the surrounding bus seats, no one else could have heard. The three times was uttered with no inflection from the rest of the statement. Nothing factoidal here. Definitely sounds like the Arnold we know. Moreover, I choose to believe that in 1969, even as he admitted Reg Park was his hero, he respected Zane, Draper, Scott, and company, but not to the point of worship, apparently. Arnold Schwarzenegger knew in his mind that he would soon topple the pride of Leeds from his lofty perch at the top of Musseldom's star ladder. At 40, says Arnold, according to Sheard, Health and Strength, May 1970, Reg is the best physique in the world. And while one suspects the admission is spiked with selfish motives, when one has demolished the accepted best in the world, does one not automatically assume the title? One nevertheless respects the express point of view. But then, hardly 2 years later, in the star dressing room of a popular London theater, minutes before a hero and worshiper are scheduled to make war over NABBA's professional Mr. Universe title, Arnold is trying to make small talk with Reg with zero results. He persists, as is his wont, with the same negative effect. Finally, his mind presumably on things far removed from Star Trek and Barbra Streisand, like maybe pumping a wee bit more height into his aging pectoralis minor, for crying out loud, Reg tells the prattling would-be usurper to ice up until after the contest, maybe. Arnold's reported reaction in the face of the none-too-subtle but oh-so-typically Park snub is destined to become the classic put-down among muscle addicts from this side of the Atlantic to outer Mongolia. "What contest, Reg?" he asks, his face childlike innocence personified. That Schwarzenegger lives. That's the Schwarzenegger I believe. And let Tyler, Mose, Kay, and the other factoid mongers go suck a zoob. Arnold's historic retort served to straighten out the most famous superego in all of muscledom. Phew, if only for a very short while. After all, when you have been God for over a quarter of a century, all other positions, including deputy God, must seem infra-dig. That's understandable. Although Schwarzenegger went on to walk all over his hero, he still professes to worship the very cloud that Park floats on, clever Dick. Musseldom's first ever superstar continues to embarrass his legion of faithful fans, most of whom are over 30 and drunk with nostalgia. At the annual NABBA anniversary show in London, sad to relate, "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio." And I know Arnold Schwarzenegger too well to believe he might possibly be serious when he suggests he's worried about Lou Ferrigno. Arnold, who faced Sergio Oliva on home ground when Pearl, Park, Scott, and other luminaries of the day were falling all over each other in the rush to hang up their posing trunks, simulating retirement rather than entering the Mr. Olympia contest. Arnold, who having first frightened the pants of Oliva before stripping him, albeit temporarily, of his incredible reputation, hurled challenge after challenge at the acclaimed greatest of the day. Can this Arnold Schwarzenegger possibly be so afraid of Ferrigno that he must now turn those weights into white-hot steel if I want to stay ahead? Impossible. Truly, I smell a factoid monger at work. Own up, chaps. It might be worth mentioning at this point that Arnold Schwarzenegger is still a very young man, despite the fact that he already has won every physique title available on several occasions. It was Leroy Colbert who told me a few years ago that only after 30 does a bodybuilder hit his absolute peak. And Arnold is still away from that figure. Just think, folks, what in blazes will the guy look like 10 years from now when he already looks like something completely out of our time? Can the man really be ahead of his day? What other explanation can there be? Unless is it that Arnold, like that other chap, Uri Geller, who can bend metal objects, rings, and things merely by touching them and concentrating,
is a receiver operated by some supernatural extraterrestrial power, a kind of pioneer, if you like, that we primitives have no answer to. The mind boggles when Schwarzenegger is the topic. By all of this, I do not mean to minimize the stature of Lou Ferrigno on the current muscle scene. Obviously, the man has the potential to be stupendous. But potential is one thing, and scaring Arnold is altogether another. Indeed, I'm of the opinion, based strictly on his latest pictures, that Ferrigno presents no immediate threat to Franco Colombo, let alone Arnold. He wins hands down over most of our current champs only when sheer animalistic mass is the deciding factor. But enough of Ferrigno. His time must certainly come. Let us now deal with the one man who could force humble pie down Arnold's throat tomorrow. Well, okay, perhaps not tomorrow, but definitely by Mr. Olympia time. It's interesting to note that while the IFBB has chosen to dilute the importance of the Big O by splitting it into categories and renaming the contest, Muscle Builder continues, like me, to use the old name. Even before I say Sergio is the man to beat Arnold, I can hear the skeptics, not to mention the Schwarzenegger freaks, reminding me how their hero ate the myth on so many occasions. And yes, I too have heard all about the Tijuana Fair and the chicken without a head, sick, sick. But I still feel certain Joe Weider will agree, Sergio Oliva never quite achieved his full potential as a physique star. Certainly, he's never appeared on stage in proper contest condition. In other words, I firmly believe the world is yet to see the man at his best, just as I believe we have not seen the last of Sergio Oliva. Recently, I saw a video recording of that Wide World of Sport Mr. World show when Arnold beat Sergio for the first time. We get these things out here in the West Indies when other folks have forgotten about them, unfortunately. In Columbus, Ohio. I suspect Sergio never saw the telecast, or he might have learned a thing or two about his contest appearances. He might have noticed how really bulky he was for that Mr. World event, smooth, while Arnold was, although not quite as ripped as he tends to be today, suitably defined. Arnold deserves to win. It cannot be denied that Sergio is the nearest thing to a natural physique champion. Except for a tendency to overbulk, the man's body is flawless. Check out the not-too-large neck and head. The impossible but true shoulders, the minuscule if smooth waist. Try to remember those Septembers when we marveled at the hams that Sergio presented us as arms and legs that one writer was moved to describe as the most fantastic in the business. I'll put it to you that if only Sergio can be persuaded to move for just 6 months out of his Chicago home and into Gold's under the tutelage of Joe Weider, nobody, Arnold, where are you? But nobody will hold a candle to him come Mr. Olympia time. Imagine Sergio at 240 pounds with cuts, intercostals, striations and all. And don't forget his natural immaculate proportions. Why, the man is plain unbeatable. But Sergio must first believe. He must acquire or regain his lost self-confidence. Forget all the bluff talk. When it comes to chutzpah, my man is down, ground level down, I mean. Training at Gold's for a while with Franco Colombo, Zane, Draper, and that other monster will restore Sergio's faith in himself. I bet he can't recall the last workout he took with his head full of positive thoughts. Last September, I had the dubious pleasure of watching Sergio Oliva display his physique in New York. Admittedly, he's still the biggest man I've ever seen. His arms must have measured at least 23 inches, and the waist is still incredibly small and without visible muscle. He was also quite smooth. But don't go getting the false impression my man was all blubber. Forget it. Except for Arnold Schwarzenegger, the myth is still unbeatable. I was somewhat disturbed to see Sergio giving the impression of a sneer where Arnold might have smiled his boyish, almost shy, humble smile. I think the audience sensed his apparent contempt, too, judging by their applause. Sort of polite. And the fact that Sergio deigned to show just five poses did not help. It merely increased the intensity of the already bad vibrations emanating from him. I like Sergio too much, and I think too highly of him to knock him with malice. I criticize him here only as a friend might, in the hope that he will wake up and set off on the way to achieving his incredible potential. The rest of the way is so short. Moreover, he has suffered enough. Isn't that what Ford said as an excuse for the Nixon pardon, that he has suffered enough? He deserves a break. Let's hope Joe Weider will forget the superficial differences that led to the overpublicized alleged communication breakdown between the two and give Sergio that break. Go on, Joe. You're big enough, I know, to make the first move towards reconciliation. It's an age of Dante, after all. The fans will be grateful. Make no mistake about it. They, too, know that Sergio Oliva,
the Muhammad Ali of bodybuilding, is the only other man alive who can make the Mr. Olympia contest interesting. The only man alive who can beat Arnold Schwarzenegger. All right. Great Rick Wayne. Good article. That was one of the first muscle magazines I ever bought. I remember reading that article and was really impressed with it. All right, guys, that's it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We'll be back next week with Bob Ciccarillo. I know I promised Bob this week, but we ended up doing the interview with Dan instead. So we will have Bob on the show next week to talk about his career in bodybuilding and also as the voice of bodybuilding for the Mr. Olympia contest. So that will be next week. Until then, stay safe, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.